Welcome back to the RM Williams Outback Podcast. Great to have you here. This is Terry Cowley. I'm the host of the podcast and also the Senior Associate Editor of RM Williams Outback Magazine. We're very grateful to Ram Trucks for sponsoring this podcast. Gone are the days of libraries being stuffy, silent book repositories. Today's libraries, especially in rural and regional Australia, are vibrant community hubs. Writer Amanda Burden took a deep dive into the world of the libraries of the Australian bush for the major feature of issue 154 of Outback magazine, and the results were pure delight. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Terry.
Amanda, you started your story at Cunnamulla Library in Outback Queensland with the late Beryl Walk. Tell me about Beryl, Amanda.
Beryl was a long-time resident of Cunnamulla. She'd lived there for 56 years and she'd been a very regular user of the library. She used to attend to enjoy the bingo sessions and learn how to use a computer properly, and over the years she became a very close friend of the town's librarian of 12 years, Tammy Hickey. And when Beryl died last year, just 2 days short of her 88th birthday, she'd made it very clear to her family how she wanted to be remembered, and the cortege left from her home and it passed by the library on its way to her funeral. And Tammy and the crew at the library ensured that they were out the front with flowers tied to the railings, forming a guard of honour for her. And Beryl had asked Tammy to deliver a eulogy at her service. So I think that was a beautiful example of just how critical the library had become to Beryl, like many elderly people in this town.
What a beautiful tribute on both sides.
Yeah, Tammy's a pretty exceptional person, I think, and anyone up Cunnamulla way will probably know that. She seems to know most of the people in the region and does her very best to provide a wonderful service for all people.
So just a fantastic example of how important libraries can be in rural, regional and remote Australia, and not just in the traditional sense.
No, I think libraries are reinventing themselves in all kinds of interesting ways. There was a fear when we had the internet introduced that libraries might become redundant, but I think in fact that they've become more important because we've seen so many government services migrate online. We still know that many rural and regional towns have poor connectivity, and some people are finding themselves having to use the library more than ever.
So many are educational and technological hubs offering fast and reliable internet services, and so many classes fostering children's literacy, creativity, social engagement, and digital competency, as your story says. That is a lot.
It is. We've come to expect quite a lot from our libraries, and we have to remember that most of them run on the smell of an oily rag, and they're dependent on very committed, passionate people who have gone way beyond the call of duty to offer all sorts of programs. And, you know, I was hearing about all the usual things you'd expect, the children's literacy and the digital connectivity classes and workshops. But there are all sorts of wonderful new things starting to arise too, where we have libraries running repair cafes, we have them associated with health professionals, offering health support to their communities. We have all kinds of important services being delivered by these libraries, including in Tamworth, a community hub that people who are homeless or have been victims of domestic violence or have found themselves sleeping rough come in and they can enjoy a movie or a talk and have something to eat. So that library is performing a crucial role in its community.
Talking about that Tamworth Library example, offering so many things like something to eat at events, perhaps have a sleep, charge your phone, use the toilets. A lot of these offerings, I guess, would have been really frowned upon in the past. I guess it shows that libraries have really been able to adapt when perhaps other services have not been able to.
Absolutely. Not only have they adapted, but they've met the need. They've found creative ways to fund these programs, and they've partnered with key individuals in their communities to work out how they can cater to this increasing need. And I think that's the really exceptional thing, that they haven't rested on their laurels. They don't see themselves as purely being a lending service. They see themselves as part of the social fabric of their community.
I like that quote that you had in your story by Jane Cowell. She's the president of the Australian Library and Information Association. She said libraries are that third place where people can connect, learn, belong, and feel less lonely. That's pretty important.
It's extremely important, and extremely important for a lot of isolated people. I heard time and time again from librarians who had extremely close relationships, especially with elderly people. And I tell the story of an elderly man in Ballarat who simply came into the library every day, pulled a book from the shelf and sat down and read. He didn't necessarily engage with other people, but that was part of his daily routine. And he was made to feel welcome. And I think that's the amazing thing about libraries. They are so egalitarian. They're welcoming, they're helpful, and they're hopeful places. They provide that sort of portal to all kinds of learning, but also important social engagement that some people have missing in their lives.
You also found that in times of emergency, libraries come into their own.
Absolutely. They're the hub that continues to have internet and phone services when often they're down elsewhere. They're the place where people congregate during a bushfire emergency, a place where people meet to discuss important issues of civic concern. They are the place where people can get important information relating to their health and well-being. And I found that this sort of partnership that's developing between library staff and health professionals in smaller communities is becoming really valuable, because there are all kinds of discrete referrals that are made. People come in, they talk to the librarians get to know what their needs might be, and they can offer the kind of recommendations that people need to get support elsewhere. And I think being that really important source of information is one thing, but it's the kindness of the staff that means that they come to assume that really important social role in the lives of the people within those communities.
Your story talked about how in Victoria, a sexually transmitted infection test vending machine was successfully trialled at Echuca Library and in nearby Indigo Shire. Dr. Rebecca McGowan delivered important men's health messages via a library partnership.
Yeah, libraries can offer all kinds of information under the guise of learning and education. And I think that's what's so special about this safe space that they provide. People can attend a library and no one will blink an eye, whereas if they went to a sexually transmitted disease clinic, it'd be quite obvious to people on the street why they were there. But this vending machine was out the back of the library. People could quite discreetly go and use it, and no one was any the wiser, and it was actually well used. And with the men's health workshops that were held, Dr. Rebecca McGowan hosted, she found that it was often the women within the communities who were big users of the libraries who heard about these sessions. They were able to encourage their partners to come along, and the men could go along feeling quite comfortable that those messages were being shared in a library environment where they weren't to be judged. They were there simply to gain information and to learn. And I think that the fact that libraries are that sort of non-judgmental, helpful place means that they can be a really important conduit for all kinds of services. I also spoke about, you know, one library being used to help promote responsible gambling. I mean, there are no ends, I don't think, to the potential uses of libraries. We just need to understand that these services do come at an additional cost, and many of these libraries have very limited funding via the councils that are responsible for them.
We'll talk a little bit more about that funding issue in a moment. You came up with some really interesting facts and figures about libraries in Australia. There are 1,706 service points for public libraries in Australia, and these libraries collectively contain more than 42 million items in physical and digital collections. It's good to know that about one third of all Australians are still members of a public library. I bet you are, Amanda.
Absolutely. I have been all my life. I was one of those nerdy kids who spent a lot of time in the library at school. And I can speak very frankly about the fact that I think libraries can be a sanctuary for people. They can be a refuge. I know during tough times at school, I always found a supportive ear in the library, and I could find something to read and engage myself and distract myself. So I've been a library user my entire life, had our children signed up when they were babies so that we could borrow tons and tons of board books. We attended all the children's literacy groups that were offered, and I'm really pleased to say that both of our children are still avid readers. So I think that once you get into the system, you start to recognise the whole range of services that they provide. And these days, there's a lot on the platform. You can borrow ebooks, podcasts, videos, all sorts of things that just make life a little bit less lonely, and certainly very engaging if you're into personal development. And I think that was one of the really, I guess, things about libraries that I hadn't thought about until I produced this story, how critical they are to our learning, to our development of critical thinking. And I think it was Jane Cowell who said that they're also important for democracy. They ensure that we have informed, literate citizens and communities who can engage in community life.
Definitely. And you talked about the importance of libraries to children's literacy, but a lot of libraries are also addressing adult literacy.
Yes. In Singleton, I tell the story of the need that became apparent there. They were discovering that people were coming in and using the library, but didn't quite perhaps have the literacy skills that they needed to apply for jobs and to function within society. And so they started offering adult literacy classes, and those have been extremely popular and well used, and they have resulted in people finding their connections within the community. So I think libraries can serve that really important anchoring function.
You also spoke to Jane Garner of Charles Sturt University, and she said that library staff are increasingly working with members of the public experiencing homelessness, poverty, mental illness, domestic violence, and substance abuse.
Yes, unfortunately, a lot of people who are a little down on their luck can fall through the cracks, and libraries are always open. You know, when all sorts of other services may have left a rural or regional town, you can generally find a library. And in that library, you can generally find a helpful, kind person who can direct you to whatever it is you're seeking. And I think those people have found libraries to be that place of sanctuary, and libraries are working increasingly to cater to their needs. And I talked about this practice of social prescribing, whereby libraries are helping to identify the people who just need extra support in their lives. And it can be something non-medical. It can be joining a craft group or joining an exercise group. The libraries are very good at identifying what the needs are within their community and then working to meet them. And unfortunately, I think there are an increasing number of people who are finding that they need that support, and they're reaching out via their libraries to access it.
Within those parameters, you spoke to the community outreach coordinator at Campaspe Library at Echuca, Nerida Dye.
Yes, it's really interesting that, before I go on to that, the fact that it's often in these rural and regional centres that these needs are being identified. And I think that that's a reflection of the fact that the librarians get to know their members extremely well on a very personal basis. So if someone hasn't come in, they will ask about them. They will even phone them up. Many of them have their phone numbers, so they'll check on them. And that's what happened during COVID. We had librarians home delivering books to people that they knew relied upon them. And when I spoke to Nerida, she'd been researching this whole area of social prescribing. And it's this idea that there's a lot of people that may attend their GP, not with a medical condition, but needing to talk to someone. And so what they've established is that the libraries can be an important means of identifying who those people are and then exploring the range of options that are available to them for the kinds of activities that might make their lives more full and happy. And the libraries are helping to put those volunteer supports in place so that people can enjoy these activities for free or at a really minimal cost. They're already doing it through a lot of things like craft and learning programs, but at Campaspe, they've had about 160 volunteers and 80 clients using this service, connecting people so that they can simply enjoy their time together. And I talked about two ladies who simply shared a passion for knitting, who now on a weekly basis, they sit down via their iPads and have a chat and knit together. And it's given them the company and the purpose and the conversation that was lacking in their lives before.
I think research has shown, and we may have touched on this in a previous chat, Amanda, how important a factor being connected to your community is in actually increasing the longevity of somebody's life.
Yes, it's really interesting that many of the most successful programs operated by libraries involve seniors, people who come in once or twice a week, and sometimes that's the only social contact they have. Obviously, that social connection is really important to the health and well-being of all of us, and especially if you're an older person who has lost a partner or lost friends and doesn't have immediate family. The library is coming to be that family for you and to bring you into this welcoming space where you can sit with fellow people and just have a conversation and a cup of tea and maybe win a box of chocolates when you're playing bingo. For some people, that's the absolute highlight of their week.
Just changing tack a little, Amanda, you did talk about the importance of the National Library of Australia in acquiring, preserving and sharing with millions each year collections valued at $3.7 billion. That's a pretty high figure, isn't it?
It's incredible. And we will have all been into significant libraries like the National Library of Australia or the State Library of New South Wales or Queensland. But what we see on the shelves is only a very small proportion of the written, the oral, the visual, the digital records that are held there. And these are really critical to our cultural heritage. They reflect the diversity of our country, the major developments in our country. And for First Nations people especially, they're a really important source of records about our identity and our past. And in the National Library, which is our largest repository, they've got everything from oral history recordings to video recordings, photographs, recordings of music, maps, objects of cultural significance. These are all really important to how we see ourselves, how we explore our history, and also inform the future development of our country. So these large libraries are really important, I think, to that sense of who we are and the democracy that I mentioned earlier. We can all have access to this information. And via Trove, you know, the wonderful online resource, much of this is now at our fingertips. And it means that anyone, regardless of where they live, can do all sorts of wonderful historical research that might be relevant to their family history, might be relevant to the history of their town, might be relevant to the history of their language and their culture. And libraries continue to perform a very important role in that regard.
Of course, Amanda, not all libraries contain books.
No. No, I found out that there are many more kinds of libraries. I mean, we've all seen the little street libraries that are popping up all over the country, that nice little, you know, cubicle or even a box at the end of the street where people are sharing books. But there are all kinds of other libraries too. There are repair libraries where you can borrow tools and equipment to do jobs at home. There are seed libraries where you can buy or exchange seeds to grow vegetables. There are toy libraries for families to borrow toys at a very affordable rate. And in many parts of Australia now, we're starting to see tool libraries. And some of these were established in the wake of the Black Summer bushfires, when people whose entire homes had been destroyed wanted to start that painful task of cleaning up and rebuilding. And so we had charities like Lions and others establishing tool libraries whereby people could go in and borrow some tools essential to that cleanup operation. But of course, along the way, they get to meet other people. They get to sit down and have a cup of tea and to share their experiences. And that kind of debriefing and interaction that accompanied the borrowing of a rake or a hoe was just as important as the practical help that that tool was going to provide them.
That makes so much sense though, doesn't it? I mean, tools are very expensive and you often won't use them very regularly. So to have a library where those sorts of resources can be shared, just from a sustainability point of view, makes a lot of sense as well.
Very much so. And I think that sharing economy is behind the tool libraries, the seed libraries, a whole range of community initiatives that are just aimed at better using what's available. And I think too, giving people a sense that they're in it together, you know, that we all have a shared commitment to looking after our environments, our homes, and using as few resources as we can and using what we do have wisely.
You also came across the National Virtual Core Library.
Yeah, this was interesting. We all understand a little, I guess, about the geological history of Australia, but when it comes to storing core samples containing rocks and minerals from all over the country, this responsibility rests with what are known as core libraries. And many of the geological surveys throughout Australia have a core library, which contains these often extremely long core samples that have been taken all over the country to give a representation of what rocks and minerals occur there. And this, of course, is really important. Some of these samples have been retrieved from depths of up to 2 kilometres, you know, deep within the earth. These are, of course, important to mineral and energy exploration. They provide all sorts of geotechnical information which can be helpful when it comes to construction or even mapping groundwater supplies. So anyone who has an interest in this, and that could be anyone from miners through to local government staff members, can get a sense of what the landscape looks like to guide them in whatever it is they're trying to do. And these have even gone virtual, whereby virtual records of these core samples can now be accessed right across Australia. You don't even have to physically visit the library. So these samples are really extremely expensive to take in the first instance. So there are lots of different people that can benefit from that sample well into the future.
That's one of those libraries that I don't think I'll ever be using, but I'm glad someone's doing it.
Yes, indeed.
You also came up with another great example of what libraries do with the Outback Library Service. It's run out of Broken Hill, and you talked about Robert Vagg and his son Nigel of Moolah Station between Cobar and Ivanhoe in New South Wales.
Yes, it became a bit of a confession session, this one. I was talking to Nigel about how the Outback Library had changed their lives. They'd lived out there for many years, well before television, and for many years had relied primarily on the radio for any entertainment. But this Outback Library Service has served them beautifully for 50 years. And Nigel was telling me about his father, Robert, who lived a very hard life, and he's still with us, fortunately, at 89 and still using the library.
I believe he's turned 90 now, Amanda.
Yes, yes. But he had a great passion for reading and often would read in the bath. And unfortunately, the weary days on the property would often get the better of him and the books would slip into the bathwater. And so they, for many years, used to get odd questions from the library service asking why they were returning so many water damaged books. But there was a very good reason, and now I'm afraid that the secret's out. So
it is.
That was the story there. But obviously these books are really important to people who cannot easily access a library. There are 330 patrons of this service, and they live in an area that stretches over 238,000 square kilometres. So via, you know, road and airmail contractors, these books and DVDs and magazines and CDs arrive on a regular basis to help ease their isolation and keep them connected with the outside world.
And we did entice Robert to pop into the bath for a photo by Nigel for our story. Isn't that good of them? You'll have to get the magazine to see that. There's also a beautiful picture of another Outback Library Service user, Maddie Jonas's children. It's a beautiful picture of Ellis, Florence and Campbell going down to the letterbox to pick up their green bag from the Outback Library Service and all the goodies inside.
Yeah, and you've got these wonderful librarians who over the years get to know the tastes of their patrons and get to know the kinds of books that they might put aside for them. It's just a wonderful relationship that also develops between the library and these users. And right from a very early age, you know, Maddie has these three little children, but we also talked to Chanel Crozier and her family, who her sister Emily has a son now. And so you've got three generations of a family who have grown up using this service and benefiting from having these books delivered to them. And it's, you know, hats off to this library crew. They do an amazing job at ensuring that all the little goodies go out regularly to people and provide that sort of lifeline to them.
And of course, it helps with the children's literacy and it provides entertainment to older adults as well. But it's much more than that, isn't it? It's more like, we know you're out there, we're thinking of you, and here's almost like a little packet of love coming your way.
Yes, and I spoke to Neil Lego, who he was telling me about the sort of isolated life he lived in the early days on his property. And he was saying that reading, which was his only really form of recreation, probably saved his sanity. And he looked forward to the mail plane arriving. I think it is love and care that's behind this service. It's the fact that there's someone in Broken Hill who understands what Neil likes to read and will make sure that there's a nice little surprise in his mailbag when it arrives.
Now, we did touch on the issue of funding. Libraries are becoming all things to all people, but there is a concern that country libraries in particular need more funds to do what they need to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know quite how libraries manage to do all that they do with the funding that they have. There's a really significant funding challenge here and a gap that is widening between the libraries of our urban areas and those that are located in rural and urban Australia. And I spoke with the president of Friends of Libraries Australia, who was talking about the economic return on investment from country libraries, the fact that for every $1 invested in a library, they deliver $4 or more. The financial side of things is one thing, but then when you think about the social capital they generate, these are really important public cultural institutions, and they can only remain free and open for all the kind of learning and engagement that I've described if they continue to be funded. And with the additional demands being made on libraries, I think we have to recognise that that comes at a cost and that we do need to fund them accordingly and support these wonderful staff who do such great things to support their communities.
I mean, spending money on libraries possibly saves money further down the track in terms of health, mental health, all those sorts of considerations.
Yes, and it's just the fact that somebody can go in there and not feel so alone, who can go in there and get a recommendation for an exercise group or a craft group to join, who might, you know, enjoy the reading and engagement with learning, but who also has contact with somebody else. And all of those sorts of important social functions mean that libraries are equalisers. They look after people in a very practical way and provide that sort of connective tissue in our communities.
In fact, I was just going to finish up with a quote from the CSU researcher Jane Garner, who pretty much says just that. She says, they're much more than the books on their shelves. They are the spaces people gravitate to. Libraries have become the front bar, which is an interesting analogy, where you can walk in, people know your name, and you'll be greeted with a smile. They are the connective tissue in communities, as you just said. Well, on that note, I think I'm going to head off to the library, Amanda.
Well, just make sure that you check out the latest releases, and I'm sure Outback will be there on the shelf.
I might have to blow the dust off my library card, but I think it's about time I get back there. You've definitely inspired me. So thanks, Amanda.
I'm pleased to hear it. And yes, everybody support your libraries. They're fantastic places and the people in them are extraordinary.
This interview was based on Amanda Burden's story, New Chapters, in issue 154 of Outback. Thanks so much for speaking with me, Amanda, and sincere thanks for a wonderful story that I'm sure readers will love.
My pleasure.
And thank you for lending your ears to this episode of the Outback Podcast. Hit subscribe so you'll know when the next one drops. I'm Terry Cowley from RM Williams Outback Magazine, and I'll talk to you then.